Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. When I called my guest to discuss our topic for today, he said he didn't have much time to talk with me because he was on his way to visit the governor of California. Now, how many phone conversations begin like that? But it was the reason for his visit to Sacramento, California, among other things, that we'd like to talk with him about today. Alan Reinick is the director of the Church State Council and is speaking with us from his office in Westlake Village near Los Angeles. Alan, welcome back to Life Quest Liberty.
Thanks, Charles. It's a delight to be with you, but no, it wasn't Governor Brown himself we were off to meet, but his staff.
Well, you were going to his offices anyway.
That's certainly correct.
Okay, all right. So when you went to the governor's office, what was on your mind and what was on the mind of the staff members?
Well, one of the most important, perhaps the most significant religious liberty issue in America today, which is the subject of a critically important bill in California, and one that has serious expectation of winding up on the governor's desk, which is why his staff was wanting to meet with our group and find out more about the bill. It addresses the problem of religious discrimination in the workplace.
Now, when you say the staff wanted to meet with you, had you made overtones to them, or were they just looking around for consenting opinions on this thing?
This time of year, come summertime, the governor's staff takes a look at the legislative agenda and picks out the bills that they expect are going to get passed.
Mm.
And they start their hard work of analyzing the issues to understand, you know, whether something is necessary, whether it's well drafted, whether it's an important bill, whether it's something that the governor can support. And, you know, with thousands and thousands of bills introduced, there's a fairly short list that gets to that point. The fact that we were singled out by the governor's staff, and by the way, most of those bills may get a 15-minute, very brief meeting review. They spent an hour with us going into considerable detail about the problems of religious accommodation.
So they know that this is a very serious situation in the state of California. That's what I hear you saying.
A serious situation and a bill that looks like it's going to pass. The state Senate is expected to pass the bill because we do have bipartisan support.
Okay. All right. What is this bill and how is it going to affect those of us who are concerned about and are longing for very strict church-state separation?
Church-state separation itself is one part of the equation of protecting religious freedom in this country. With the passage of the Civil Rights Act in 1964, Congress committed itself to a very simple proposition that people should be eligible for employment and retained for employment based on the quality of their work, not on certain characteristics like their race or their gender or their religion. But increasingly, while the law is very good at protecting against most forms of discrimination, the law has been weakened greatly by the U.S. Supreme Court, and Congress has refused to act to strengthen laws protecting people of faith and their right to keep a job and not be put in a position where they're forced to choose between obedience to God and putting food on the table.
Now, give us an example of this, Alan. What would be a situation that a person of faith would find him or herself that this bill would aid them?
Church State Council is a Seventh-day Adventist organization. Most of our clients run into trouble for Sabbath observance. I'll give you one example. I'll be meeting in Tucson this week with a pastor's wife who was fired as a manager for a local Wendy's restaurant. And the person who fired her told her point blank it wasn't because of the store's performance. It was because of her unavailability on weekends, i.e., Sabbath, Friday night sundown to Saturday night sundown.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now, of course, they contest that there were various performance issues. But meanwhile, we have his admission to her. So, you know, this is the kind of thing at this point in the economy, I'm looking for help, because we have so many people who are losing their jobs because of their faith, and especially Sabbath observance. But I'm getting calls from people who are fired because of Sunday.
Really?
I have a case right now against one of the major department stores, a household name, but I'd rather not mention, you know, the name. Very popular store where probably many of our listeners shop. And they fired a lovely Presbyterian woman. She didn't work on Sundays. Hadn't worked on Sundays for several years. You know, it was a growing conviction for her. She had for a number of years, but she was accommodated for a while. And the irony of it is that when they looked at their sales and their business model after she was fired, they determined that they didn't have the business to sustain replacing her. And so she was a top salesperson, so they lost the benefits of having her work the other days of the week.
Yes.
And, you know, she had developed a client base over many years. They lost all of that, or much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a lose-lose situation. There's no way that the store benefited from firing her.
Now, Alan, we have been talking about workplace accommodation for years on this program. I've spoken to you about it before. Why isn't the message getting out to employers that there are rights here that we need to guard, and that it is to their best benefit to look at work performance as opposed to spiritual attributes of someone?
I'm not entirely sure that I know the answer to that question, Charles. If I could figure that out, maybe we could really make
true.
A dent.
Yeah.
I will tell you that medium-sized companies, large companies, they have well-developed human resources operations. Just last week, I was in a settlement meeting. It was attended by the human resources director for a medium-sized company. He flew in from the Chicago area. Before he made the decision to fire my client, he knew absolutely nothing about religious accommodation.
Really? Really?
And this is so typical. And this was another case where, well, you know, we have to have you working overtime on Saturdays because it's our busy season, but they didn't replace her.
It just amazes me that, you're a lawyer. Ignorance is not a defense. He can say, I didn't know anything about it, but that is not something that will stand up in court.
No, of course not. And if anything, the kind of blatant behavior that is just indefensible lends itself to punitive damage awards if you go that far. Rarely in the best interests of someone who's lost their job to pursue a case all the way to trial, because it means that you can't heal, you can't have closure, and it could take years.
It would seem to me, Alan, that we're just being that great American character trait that, you know, I'm going to do it until I get caught doing it, and I don't care what the law says, this is what I want. So it sounds like we need to do some changing of the attitudes of people in this country, and I'm assuming this is also happening in other countries, that we need to do an attitude adjustment here. How would you say we should go about doing an attitude adjustment where people will say, hey, I'm going to be tolerant to other people's faiths on a grassroots level? I'm just going to be open to what they're saying and act accordingly.
Okay, well, first of all, I got to call you out on your use of the term tolerant. That is a term in the immortal words of an article written by my good friend Clifford Goldstein, Why I Find Tolerance Intolerable.
Ah.
To tolerate somebody means to assume that you're superior and they are inferior, and you're just tolerating them.
And I think that's exactly what's going on, Ellen. These people think that they are superior to their employees.
Well, okay, but see, in many cases, When it comes to religious accommodation problems, it's a very different subset of discrimination. Mm. Because when we think of discrimination, we think of people who are, you know, exclusive to their own set, who have some kind of hostility to another group who are different, whether that's because of where they were born or the color of their skin, you know, whatever it is, you know, you associate hostility with discrimination.
Yes.
When it comes to religious accommodation, in many cases, it's not a matter of hostility. It's a matter of power.
Hmm.
And it's a matter of, you know, we're the boss. This is a system. This is the way we do things. And if you can't figure out how to fit in, tough luck. You know, it's on you. And frankly, you know, that was the way it was with the major department store. The HR person was asking, isn't there something else we can do? Mm-hmm. And the answer from the higher-ups was, no, this is the system. You know, you either work the system or you're out. Nobody ever asked the question, are we better off firing her or keeping her on to work any of the other 6 days? And if they'd actually looked at that question, they would have said, well, it's obvious. She's a great salesperson. We're much better off figuring out how to cover Sundays and keeping her on. But they don't ask those questions. You'd think that businesses would make smart business decisions, but often they're just driven by bureaucracy and by power. I'm the boss. I tell you when to work. You're not going to come in. You're out of here.
You're right. There seems to be some type of an attitude, a corporate attitude that sort of has a life of its own. It takes over even the humanity of what's going on in a corporation. And this has been happening ever since there's been a company, ever since there's been corporations, this has been happening. So, Alan, what is your answer? We're legislating it. Is that the way we do it in California? We legislate people into doing what they should be doing all along anyway?
I'm going to give you a longer answer.
Okay.
The core provisions of the bill are twofold. One is to make explicit that when people express their faith in their appearance, that that's something that needs to be accommodated, that we don't, if we're going to talk about inclusiveness in America and that people of different cultures and different religions are welcome here and are welcome to work, then we're not going to segregate them, we're not going to discriminate against them because they wear a beard, they wear a head covering, they wear a cross around their neck, you know, they express their faith somehow in their appearance. And we say, okay, that's fine. We'll still judge you on the basis of your performance. So that's one of the provisions which you would think by this point would be unnecessary, but sadly, it's very necessary. The other provision, which applies very broadly, is to remind employers of what the balance is between their right to get the labor out of their worker that they hired them for,
right,
and the right of the worker not to have to give up their faith as a condition of employment. And so the balance is found in what's known as the undue hardship standard, that the obligation to provide the religious accommodation only goes so far if providing the accommodation would result in an undue hardship that is a genuine hardship, i.e., a significant difficulty or expense. A trivial difficulty, a trivial expense is not enough. But under federal law, sadly, it is enough. The employer can say, you know, almost anything is too much of a hardship.
Yeah.
We don't have to do that to accommodate.
Yeah. Does this bill somehow go in there and list what a hardship is and what is not a hardship?
No, it really can't do that.
Well, it still leaves it open for interpretation then, and then an employer can say, well, okay, that's a hardship because of X, and X may not be a hardship for anybody else in the whole world except that employer, but it's still going to work because it's a hardship.
Let's put it this way. That's what the lawsuits are made of. Mm. Obviously, what will constitute a sufficient hardship, this is the stuff that winds up being decided by judges, by juries, the result of settlements. But by making a tougher standard, the hope is that employers will get the message, a very simple message, oh, we really do have to accommodate. Because mm-hmm. in my experience, if the employers get the idea that they're supposed to accommodate, they do it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't cost them anything. Mm-hmm. And many employers don't even realize that they're capable of doing it. But if they were to try, they might be pleasantly surprised. Now, I have been on panels with some companies that really are committed to this. American Airlines, for example. Toyota Motors. Toyota has break rooms that are set apart in the factories so that workers of various faiths can go and pray, read the Bible. Muslims can go. They have, you know, 5 daily prayers during their waking hours, and some of those are going to fall during their shift, and they can take their breaks and go and pray. And Toyota has found that the cost of religious accommodation means that they get to hire the most qualified, competent workforce. Mm. And it cuts down on the costs of getting sued.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they have understood that this is good for business, and other companies have understood this also. But, of course, too many companies don't take it seriously and don't care to accommodate. And it's not, you know, the volume of cases is smaller, and so the human resources people, all they're told is, well, you know, you can't discriminate on the basis of race and gender and religion, and that's all they know. Yeah. They don't know anything about accommodation.
It really comes down to something you told me about a year ago. We were talking about a similar case like this, and I said to you, Alan, is it really the corporation, or is it the people who run the corporation? Are we dealing with a black and white issue of this is the corporate law, this is not the corporate law, or are we talking about the people running the corporation? And you said it comes down to the people running the corporation. If you have someone up there who understands this in his or her own heart, then it's going to trickle down throughout the corporation and there's going to be accommodation. So it really is the person in charge, not the company itself.
Well, I may have said that. It's entirely possible. I don't remember. But I will say from my perspective now that both can be true.
Really? Really?
Because, you know, I have butt up against companies where there are people who would like to accommodate, but they can't because of the system. And I've run into situations where the system would probably permit the accommodation, but the people refuse.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of, you know, there is no one size fits all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the California Workplace Act, what's it going to do? How is it supposed to help the situation?
Assembly Bill 1964, already passed the Assembly, soon to be voted by the California Senate, would essentially cross-reference the definition of undue hardship, which is significant difficulty or expense, and make it clear, because employers think that the federal standard, if they think at all, they think that the federal standard applies. The federal standard is, you know, we have to provide an accommodation, but you know, if it results in even a minimal hardship, we don't have to do it. And so they don't take it seriously, and they don't realize that there is this definition in California. So we're cross-referencing the definition to make it clear that in California, you can only not accommodate if it's a real hardship, if it's going to result in a significant difficulty or expense.
Okay, all right. Well, we will keep an eye on this. We'll have you back on the show when it passes, and you can give us a little update on that as well. President James Madison wrote, "Whilst we assert for ourselves the freedom to embrace, to profess, and to observe the religion which we believe to be of divine origin, we cannot deny an equal freedom to those whose minds have not yet yielded to the evidence which has convinced us. If this freedom is abused, it is an offense against God, not against man." A message from your friends at LibertyMagazine.org. Before we leave the subject, I want to ask you if someone is listening to this program right now who wants to go work for a corporation, they want to go work for XYZ Inc., and they want to know what the temperature is in this area. They want to know what the atmosphere is in workplace accommodation. And this person definitely has some issues, whether it's something they want to wear or something that they want to keep a day or something that they can't do or can do in that job. Where do they go to find out what that company has to offer and what limitations that company would place on them in this area?
I don't know that the corporate policies regarding employment are accessible to the general public.
Really? Really?
I don't know that. I suppose you can always try to search a website. But, you know, corporate policies regarding scheduling and what have you don't really tell the whole story anyway.
Hmm.
I mean, with this one company, there was a policy to accommodate religious holidays. And I asked at her deposition, I asked the HR person, well, why, you know, didn't some of these things apply? Why, it says she could put in for unpaid leave. Mm-hmm. Why couldn't she take unpaid leave to observe the Sabbath? Oh, that policy only applied to holidays like Christmas or Easter or, you know, Yom Kippur that come around, you know, once a year. It doesn't apply to a weekly holiday.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it doesn't say that.
It's you assumed, know? The great
so
assumption.
You can take off Christmas, but you can't take off Sabbath.
Yes.
You know, I think, honestly, for people of faith, the thing to do is, number one, pray.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, try as best you can to finesse the issue of what your religious need is until after you're hired. Because if you put down on your employment application, I can't work every Sunday, mm-hmm. I can't work every Saturday, you're likely not to get hired. I had a colleague of mine say, you know, I have a Christian law firm. I don't really want to hire somebody wearing a turban or, you know, a woman whose head is covered. And I said, well, you know, the law is going to require you not to discriminate. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how does it work in practice? In practice, when they show up for an interview, you know, you get to see what they look like. And that's if you true. Don't like them, you don't hire them.
That's true.
Now, that's
true.
Discrimination. Yeah. But that's reality.
This is really a gray area here. We're talking about no black and white. We're swimming in gray here.
Look, how do we create a culture where we really do see that everyone is a child of God, that everyone should be judged, as Martin Luther King Jr. said, you know, on the content of their character, not the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvelous ideal, but, you know, as Christians, we understand that we live in a fallen, sinful human community. I think that, you know, all of us can examine our own hearts, our own biases and prejudices, and we all have them. And we can aspire to do better, and we can aspire to make it socially unacceptable to harbor these kinds of attitudes. But, you know, why? I mean, we're going to talk in a little bit in another show, I think, about, you know, why somebody was so filled with hate that he went into a temple and shot up a bunch of people of a different faith. Why? You know, why in America do we still have a culture where that kind of hatred can be nourished?
For the same reason, I'm assuming, that we have a culture where someone can be discriminated against about what they're wearing for their faith or how they act for their faith or the accommodation they want in the workplace for their faith. We seem to be in great need of acceptance of other people as they are, as opposed to trying to make them who we want them to be corporately or individually. Am I on the right track here?
The basis of all discrimination, I think, is a sense of insecurity and a desire to see oneself as belonging to a group and to see that group as somehow superior to other groups. And so we, you know, we develop our own sense of esteem and our own sense of identity and security from our identification with our group at the expense of hostility against the other. But, you know, to me, the only true remedy is the gospel of Jesus Christ, which teaches us that the love of God extends to every human being and that there are no distinctions. There is neither male nor female, Jew or Greek, rich or poor, free or slave, that we're all one in Christ. Those distinctions, those barriers, Christ in Ephesians says he came to break down the dividing wall. That dividing wall in the culture of the day was between Jew and Greek, but we could talk about it today in terms of black and white, in terms of, you know, Asian and white or Latino. You know, there's a lot of hostility against Mexican immigrants in the Southwest where I live. So, you know, but Christ came to break down those dividing walls and we could see each and every one of us as brothers and sisters, as children for whom Christ died. That's the gospel. And that's really the only antidote to bigotry.
Well, this has been an eye-opening show, Alan. I really appreciate your words of wisdom here. Alan Reinach, he is the director of the Church State Council and is speaking with us from his office in Westlake Village near Los Angeles. Alan, thank you very much for your words. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Charles, always.
Until next time, listener, this is Charles Mills along with Alan Reinach, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.